Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
It is simply incorrigible that these political national committees are paying, you know, paying for the legal fees of a presidential candidate. Can you imagine just the madness that here is this political committee that's supposed to get people elected? What are they doing instead? Paying off legal fees. The candidates got all these legal fees and they have to be paid off. It is stunning what the Democrats are doing. What? Oh, you thought it was Trump and the RNC. Well, no, the story goes that the DNC paid $1.5 million for legal fees in the Biden documents, the classified documents investigation. They paid over $1.5 million to lawyers. And you say to me, wait a second, I thought this was wrong and terrible. Funny, so did I. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. 833-468-8669. 833. Got Tony. We'll play a little Ask Tony Mostly Anything. Go ahead. Ask. Politics, culture, personal, cigars, whatever it is. I will answer mostly anything. And also, I got asked a question on X. Why is it wrong to pay off student loans, but it was okay to have the Paycheck Protection Program? You have a lot of people who want to conflate these two things. I got asked the question. I will answer that. I will do that in the next hour. I promise I will answer that one for you. But the paying of legal fees from a political team there, right, for the Democratic National Committee, Republican National Committee, when you donate, you're donating to get someone elected. And you're donating maybe to get your party elected, right? You like those policies, you like those philosophies. And I have discussed on the RNC side, when Lara Trump was running for co-chair and she said the words that our number one job is to get Donald Trump elected. It's not your number one job. Your number one job is to get Republicans elected up and down the line. Now, she has since kind of amended that and talked through that, and not perfectly in my view. Then again, I never would have had her as the RNC co-chair, but here we are right now. Yes, the nepotism thing is real. It's madness. It's ridiculous. We should say so. We should want, I don't know, better. My take. I'm not even saying she's a bad person. If you want me to say, well, she's there, time will tell. Okay, she's there, time will tell. I wanted better than Ronna McDaniel. I don't know if I got that. For the record. Some people get insulted by that. I don't. What history does Ronna McDaniel have? I mean, does Lara Trump have to any of this? Within the party apparatchik. She exists because her last name is Trump. It doesn't make her a bad person. It just is reality. But the giving of the money to the RNC and people were up in arms, it's just going to Trump's legal bills. When it goes to Biden's legal bills, it's okay? Because that's what we told. It's okay. Just like we are told, if you don't know if you're going to vote for me or Trump, then you ain't black, which is what Joe Biden told America. As a matter of fact, if you are black and you vote for conservatives, you vote for Republicans, I mean, they just flat out call you a traitor. They flat out say that you are a traitor. How dare you? Well, a lot was made, and we said this would happen. Trump is there at the Chick-fil-A in Atlanta, and he's placing an order for milkshakes. And there are these women, black women, young black women are like, I don't care what the media says about you. I love you and we support you. And they're taking pictures and they're all over it. And the point is that if you tell people that nobody who is black supports Trump, this flies aggressively in the face of it and does a lot of damage to the argument. And so that woman who was with Trump was on Fox and Friends earlier today, and she's discussing media and dishonesty about the black community and Trump?
That's the first question you asked me. Mm-hmm. So, of course, in the excitement of everything, I wasn't able to really relay my message, but the general consensus or social media would have you thinking that if President Trump were to show up to the HBCU campuses or walk around the AUC community, that like some angry mob would form or a riot would ensue and that he would not be welcomed. And clearly the sentiment in that room the other day was the complete opposite. He was very welcome. People were excited to see him. People showed up in support of him. And people, of course, were from all four institutions within the AUC, the local HBCU community in Atlanta, and they all showed up in support of him. So
that is seriously problematic for the political left. Now, wouldn't be if they didn't spend every day telling you that everybody on the political right was a racist, which is not only a lie, it's very damning and damaging to society. Every day you say that the person you don't like is a racist, everything you don't like is racist, everything you disagree with is racist. My God, who wants to live in that world? I know why people turn off cable news. And here's this woman, and she's part of an organization, I think, called Conserve the Culture. Everybody's part of something. Everybody's creating something. Everybody's got their own brand. But making an argument. Yeah, he's fine. That guy there, you know, with the hair and the orange, fine. He's not our issue. This idea that somehow black equals a vote, a type of vote, a kind of vote, it's the most sick, twisted, disgusting, demeaning thing that's out there. We talk about this a lot in terms of LGBT. Who the hell said the L, the G, and the B is with the T? The T has turned into this political insanity, cause celeb, revolutionary arm that is a political movement that doesn't believe in America writ large. That's what they've turned into. And they say if you're the L, the G, and the B, you have to come along. And if you don't come along, we have seen people physically attacked because they're not coming along. The people in the T weren't there for Stonewall. Do you know what those fights were like there in Manhattan? Would that be considered the Lower East Side? Why am I having a brain fart on this? By the way, why am I using expressions like brain fart? Seriously, this is not going well. The fights about Stonewall, the fights to be able to walk down the street and holding your partner's hand, those kinds of things. Say what you will. Those people were engaged in an actual fight. The T is engaged in forcing you to submit. These are very different things. So I don't understand why anybody thinks the L, the G, or the B is somehow with the T or has to be connected to it. No. My advice to people who are lesbian or gay or bisexual is to stand up and say, yeah, that T stuff ain't for me. Thank you very much. Men are men and women are women, and that's all there is. And J.K. Rowling is correct. That is it. And, oh, I believe that group is very, very large, but they are not given enough places to be able to say the thing. And they also, yeah, I don't want to be bothered with it. That happens a lot. I would be curious if that happens in the quote-unquote black community. Oh, please, I'm not for Biden. I don't want any part of this nonsense. I don't want to get into it. I'm not going to put something out on Twitter. Just leave me alone. Most people just want to be left alone. I don't know about you. Most people just want to be left alone. That's what they're looking for. But the idea that because someone has a certain skin color, they're going to vote a certain way is nutty. And to demand it by claiming that they are not really that skin color if they vote a different way is so demeaning and despicable. You understand that Joe Biden is like this, by saying that, is this hateful cat. You understand it. Well, what happens when more and more people not only understand it, but are now willing to say it? That's what makes this woman, regardless of the group or whatever it is she's created, at this moment in that video, that's what makes it so incredibly strong. Because it is the visual repudiation of Biden, of Sonny Hostin, of Kamala Harris, of Nicole Wallace, of Jemele Hill. It is the repudiation of April Ryan. Goodbye. Nope. We are not people who think like that. And how dare you think we only think like that? And for other people, it's like, ooh, okay. Well, now we're saying it out loud, and off they go. Cannot describe to you how strong that visual is. And if I'm Trump or Team Trump or supportive of him, I am showing that video everywhere. The main reason, it will upset the Biden supporters to no end. And that, therefore, they'll start calling more and more people who are black or of color traitors for not being more supportive of Biden. Which, of course, I only hope makes more and more people who are of color, feel the air quotes, say, who the hell are you talking to? I'll support anybody I want. My mind works. I make my own choices. Just like the L, the G, and the B. That's the way it should be for all of us. You are not part of a group because somebody else says you're a part of a group. You've got a mind. Use it. I'm Tony Katz. Up in a little bit, Griff Jenkins, Fox News, spoke with him about the border and this NBC report about this Afghan national who was known to be on the terrorist watch list, yet through catch and release, he's been in the country for almost a year, then gets apprehended, and a judge lets him out on bond, and how all of that broke down, plus what we should expect on the idea of the impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas, and two, that Griff Jenkins, Fox News, was pretty clear.
I'll tell you, I've been covering the border since 2010 when I first started doing it back then, and I've never, up until this point, had so many senior top officials that deal with the border, not only willing behind closed doors, but now publicly with the case of Ray, willing to admit in soberly state they are super concerned about a terror attack happening here on the homeland, on our soil. And so, you know, at this point, if and when that happens, Tony, you're going to have finger pointing the likes of which you've never seen.
But it's going to now bring us back to, well, does that mean we make a move on removing Mayorkas, who was already impeached? This is the question. I will get into that with Griff Jenkins coming up in a little bit. You guys know that I live in Indianapolis or in the Indianapolis area, but not only is Indianapolis getting this threat, a host of cities all across the country are getting threatened with a blockade. Dun, dun, dun. This was the press release. Economic blockade on April 15th in solidarity with Palestine. Well, it's certainly not in solidarity with geography. Local activists, activists, are joining a multi-city coordinated... They have to say activists. Hateful bastards who want to burn it all down doesn't fit as well on a t-shirt. Local activists are joining a multi-city coordinated economic bloc demanding the end of genocide occurring in Palestine and demanding an end to the financial support of Zionist entities. I think it's Zionist entities, they might mean me. I'm not sure. If anybody would like to support the Zionist entity, let me know. We accept Bitcoin, Ethereum, gold, cash. Producer Carl, is there anything else that we accept? Is there anything else?
More cash.
More cash. We accept cash and more cash. But that's, I think for these people, I think that's a little too on the nose for the Jewish guy. So we will also accept bagels and latkes. Why should we be too on the nose when we could be equally on the nose? Their plan is, in cities around the country and around the globe, so Oakland is on the list, Miami is on the list, San Antonio is on the list, Detroit, then they talk about Minneapolis, and then Johannesburg, Brussels, Seoul, the Netherlands, Taipei, Catalonia. When you've lost Catalonia, people. And they're going to have this blockade. What is the plan? Well, in the local reporting done by Donnie Burgess here in Indianapolis, it reads an exact location of the protest is unknown, as protesters are calling for a general strike against businesses. Now, wait a second. A general strike against businesses. Usually when you hear blockade, it would be a port. Right? I remember the days of Occupy Wall Street. Those losers, they engaged in a blockade of the port in Oakland, for example. I remember talking about that with some detail. And so blockade could be something having to do with travel, roads, etc. A blockade of businesses? You mean somebody's going to decide this is the business we've chosen and 30 people are going to stand outside and not let you in? First, we should discuss this as a free speech issue. Being able to open a shop of near any kind is about an expression of oneself. This is the business that I think will be successful. This is the business that I've always had a passion for. Being able to make these choices is absolutely a conversation of self-expression. Which now the pro-Hamas folk, there's no such thing as a pro-Palestine anything. It's pro-Hamas, which is pro-terrorist, which is pro-destruction and pro-disgusting. If you're going to block a business, you're blocking someone's ability to speak. That's number one. What do you mean you're going to block the business? Like there's going to be some restaurant out there that I want to go into and you're going to tell me I can't go in? Just a question. How in the world do you think that is going to work out? How do you think it's going to work out when I walk up to the restaurant and you tell me I can't enter?
Two men enter, one man leaves. Two men enter, one man leaves. Two men enter, one man leaves.
It's not going to work out well, now is it? What these people are saying, if we're talking about private businesses, is that they're looking for a fight. They want the fight. This is, by the way, it isn't now because who knows what's going to happen. Nothing could happen for all I know. But just like blocking a roadway, just like destroying art, if you block an individual's business, the blocking is the act of violence. Anything else that happens, in my view, maybe not in the law's view, if I were you, I would follow the law, in my view, would be an appropriate response. You're going to stop me from selling my goods and feeding my kids? Because you support terrorists? Whoo! I think that might get a response. So I think this group is looking to be violent and is engaged in these conversations as we hear them, is engaging in actions of violence. In their press release, they say they have the intent of, quote, disrupting and blockading major logistical hubs, resulting in an interruption of capital flow and leading to a significant economic impact in major choke points of the economy. So when I say they are connected to the Marxists, now you know why. But that's a little bit different than the idea of going against businesses, the local ones. So we will see what we will see. But be on the lookout. Be on the lookout. Chicago, Philadelphia, Houston, Phoenix, San Diego, and my beloved Indianapolis. Meanwhile, a professor is taking on DEI. You got to hear the story. That's coming up next. This is Tony Katz Today. Find everything, TonyKatz.com. diversity set, you take on DEI at your own risk. And it is indeed a risk. DEI, they state, is diversity, equity, and inclusion. But as we have discussed and as you have seen with your own eyes, there is nothing diverse about it. There is no inclusion. And the equity side seems to mean calling some people oppressors and other people oppressed. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. It's good to be with you. The NAACP, speaking about this, has stated that DEI is indeed the future.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion. We must say the words so we can understand the meaning and not allow initials to mean something else. Diversity, equity, and inclusion is the reality of the future. It is the reality of today, and we will rob ourselves of opportunities in this nation and a global economy if we don't lean into the most talented individuals in this country.
Well, I think a fair amount of people would disagree with that. If I didn't say hello, Tony Katz. Tony Katz today, it's good to be with you. Dr. Owen Anderson is one of those people. Because as a professor at Arizona State University, he is suing over what he has described as racist mandatory diversity, equity, and an inclusion course for the faculty. He was recently on Fox News talking about it. You can follow him on X as Dr. Dr. Owen Anderson, pastor and professor, a teacher of philosophy, religious studies, and theology, joining us right now. Let's start with the basics, sir. What was the course that was mandatory? How did you find out you'd had to take it?
Yeah, well, thank you, Tony, for having me on your show. So in November of 2022, I received an email saying that I was required to take this inclusion course. And as I looked at the content, I very quickly realized this is not about inclusion at all, but it's about dividing people up based on their skin color and then assigning blame for that skin color. And so I didn't take it, and the course continues to say it's required and I'm past due. Now, Arizona has a law that says public money, tax money, cannot be spent by state agencies like universities to teach race blame. And so I'm working with the Goldwater Institute to bring this case because that's exactly what this training teaches.
I will get to that place. In full disclosure, I went to Arizona State. I did not graduate, but a soft spot in my heart for Tempe, for sure. When you get presented with this course, what did you already know or think of DEI?
Well, I knew that it is used. These words are positive words. Diversity, inclusion, equity, those all sound good. But I knew that those words are used to bring in a whole social philosophy about, as you already noted, oppression and oppressors. And specifically, what they'll focus on is whiteness. So that's a key term for them. And they'll say that the United States was founded as a white supremacist nation, and all of our history and laws are therefore tainted by white supremacy. And you have to agree to that to go through this training, which I don't believe that's the correct understanding of history.
When you say you have to agree with that, are you talking about that in theory, or was that written? Like, check the box, you agree that this is true, that the U.S. was founded as some white supremacist nation?
Yeah, there were quizzes attached to this. Now, supposedly the quizzes have been removed now, but the idea with the quizzes was you'll get a question that's to say it's a true-false question. And so to get the correct answer, let's say you have to put true to something you don't agree is true. Well, if you don't do it, you don't pass the quiz.
Talking to Dr. Owen Anderson, professor at Arizona State University, suing the university over a forced course on DEI as a faculty member, you now say to the university, I am not going to take this. The email talked about required a quote-unquote inclusive communities course, as you discussed it. You said, I'm not going to do this. How did Arizona State University respond?
Well, so far what they've done is they've left it as required and left it saying past due. So I have this sword of Damocles hanging over my head that I could be disciplined for not taking it. We have other training courses like courses on internet safety, for example, and we're told if you don't take these, you'll face discipline like having your email cut off. So I'm living underneath this threat the whole time of, well, what's going to happen because I'm not taking this course. But the other side of it is this, that Arizona law I mentioned makes it so that even if this wasn't required, you still can't use tax money to teach race blame.
I want to get into the law part and how the university responds, but you were there with Fox News discussing this. And according to what is described as the trainings here, that in addition to this idea that the United States allegedly was founded as a white supremacist society, it also states, and I'm quoting here from one of the articles discussing your case, quote, sexual identities are linked to power and heterosexuality, the dominant sexual identity in American culture, is privileged by going largely unquestioned. Now,
yep.
Is part of your work or being a guy who is teaching philosophy and religious studies, theology, does this commentary, is it more offensive to you, or is it not where your focus of study is, but just rather the generalized statement that they're putting out as fact as personally objectionable, or was it the, hey, our university shouldn't be doing this to anybody in the faculty, they're not allowed to? Was it the focus on the personal or the societal, or was it the focus on the law that made you say, we're not going to have any part of this?
Well, I would say both, because I am a Christian, and so I believe God made man male and female, and that's the standard for marriage, that God is the one who instituted marriage. And so when I see a training course teaching me that there are infinite genders, and that it's wrong to believe that God created man male and female, that's called being homophobic, I do object to that. But then at the professional level, this is the exact opposite of what a state university should be doing. A state university is a place that should actually be inclusive, not one that's mandating and requiring one specific social philosophy for all of its employees. So what I did was I started a Substack, and my Substack is Dr. Owen Anderson. It's free, and if your listeners go there, they'll see that I've been documenting on there all these examples of where the university is being misused to push a specific agenda rather than being a place for free inquiry.
Talking to Dr. Owen Anderson of Arizona State University, professor, teacher of philosophy, religious studies, and theology. You can follow him on X, DR for doctor, DR underscore Owen Anderson is where you find him. What makes this unique, and now I want to get into the legal part of this, is that in August, the whole university system, including Arizona State, said they would no longer require diversity, equity, and inclusion statements in their hiring practices. How do they now make the switch from, well, this isn't hiring, you're already hired, so therefore this is okay?
Well, so far what their spokesman has said is ASU is committed to inclusion, and this is just about inclusion. And so what the Goldwater Institute did was it released 173 pages of the transcripts and the PowerPoint slides and the videos from these training classes to show this is not about inclusion. It's not about how to work in a diverse environment. I mean, any big corporation will need training classes about that, because you're going to be working with people that are from different backgrounds. You need to know how to do that. This is way beyond that. This is making assertions about white supremacy, the problem of whiteness, the problem of homophobia, that there are infinite genders. And so this is teaching a specific social philosophy, which I think is then the opposite of being inclusive.
Before I get into, you know, your next steps, let's talk about being a professor. Whether it's you or whether it's your colleagues who may speak publicly or maybe very, very silent, whether it be at Arizona State or other universities, these moves on DEI and what some people might categorize under an umbrella of wokeness, how has it changed how professors like yourself have taught their classes?
Well, I know in my case, I'm a philosophy professor, so I really enjoy philosophy because I'm basically paid to teach students how to critically think. And so I've always done that, and I'll continue to do that. And I want them to learn how to question even the dominant perspective, which, and that's what's ironic about DEI, is it teaches about the oppressors and they're dominant and we need to question them. But then in the university setting, this is the dominant view, and it says it can't be questioned. And if you do question it, you're called all kinds of names, like bigot or homophobe, and you're not allowed to think critically about this.
So now we see you moving forward and saying, I won't do this. Is there a feeling that ASU, Arizona State University, will acquiesce? Or is this something that you believe you're going to be dealing with in the courts for a while?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, and so I've had to ask Goldwater Institute to cover those kinds of questions. But so far what they've said is it's not required. And so what I did was I posted a Substack with the current portal that links you to these classes where it says required and past due. So that's not consistent with what their spokesman said. And then they have also said this is just about inclusion and working together rather than, no, this is teaching a specific view about whiteness, which is very problematic. So far they haven't acquiesced. They've shown they're going to kind of double down on this. But I honestly don't think ASU wants this actual content public, which is what I'm doing on my Substack, because the content is very startling. When people first hear about this, they'll tell me, what's wrong with inclusive classes? That's important to be inclusive. And then I'll say, well, yes, that is, but look at what they're actually teaching. And people say, wow, that's worse than I thought it was. That's terrible.
Dr. Owen Anderson, DR underscore Owen Anderson on X, if you want to follow him, professor at Arizona State University. I appreciate you taking the time. We're going to keep up with the case. Please let us know of updates. We'd love to have you back, sir.
Thank you so much for your time today.
An absolute pleasure, Dr. Owen Anderson. Be sure to follow him on X. I've got more to get to. I'm Tony Katz. The FISA fight continues. The surveillance court. Can you or can you not spy on American citizens? Well, the people who support FISA and really support the reauthorizing of Section 702 say they have fixed the problem. And while you may have a database, you won't have unlimited spying on American citizens. But now you ask the question of whether or not anybody trusts the system and trust that the FBI or whoever's going to the FISA court won't be lying to the court, this foreign surveillance court, and getting information on American citizens without a warrant. Tony Katz, Tony Katz Today. Good to be with you. Speaker Mike Johnson said something that I think is going to bring him a world of hurt. And me, as a guy who said there, and I still believe it, there was no reason to get rid of Kevin McCarthy as speaker. You gained nothing. And the people have been pushing for a motion to vacate. You don't get rid of Speaker Johnson. You gain nothing. Well, now I think he gave them something. Listen.
When I was a member of the judiciary, I saw all the abuses of the FBI, the terrible abuses over and over and over, the hundreds of thousands of abuses. And then when I became speaker, I went to the SCIF and got a confidential briefing from sort of the other perspective on that to understand the necessity of Section 702 of FISA and how important it is for national security. And it gave me a different perspective. So I encourage all the members to go to the classified briefing and hear all that and see it so they can evaluate the situation for themselves. And I think some opinions have changed both ways, but that's part of the process. You've got to be fully informed.
What Speaker Johnson said there was, when I was a member of Congress, I oppose this. But now that I have gone to the SCIF and I've seen the classified documentation, I realize that FISA is important. That's not going to play well at all. Not going to play well at all. Meanwhile, the amendment, as Thomas Massie just pointed out, to require the warrants failed. Ended up being a tie vote, and the speaker, who usually doesn't vote, voted, and he voted against it. That's what Thomas Massie states. Congressman Chip Roy, on the floor of the House, being all sorts of Chip Roy-ish.
To be clear, this amendment is about reporting requirements. But on the point of the warrant, After the rampant abuses by the federal government, it is clear that we should have a warrant requirement under 702 to protect Americans from the querying of incidental communication collected en masse under a broad grant of power to target foreign entities. That's the truth. This is the FBI that targeted Catholics, put pro-life progressive activists in jail, and targeted President Trump. The proponents give up the game, saying openly the need to target U.S. persons right here on the floor. The only thing that makes this warrantless collection of millions of Americans' international communications lawful, quote unquote, is the government's certification that it is targeting foreigners and only foreigners. If the government changes its mind and wants to go after an American, it should have to go back and get the warrant that it skipped on the front end. This is not that hard. By the way, the argument that we would need 2,000 judges to filter through warrant requirements begs the question, which is it? The proponents' own data indicate they will only get a hit for 1% to 2% via metadata. Some of those will have exceptions under our warrant amendment that we offer, so it would probably be less than 1%. So the 2,000 judges argument is just straight up false. It's just not that hard. If you want to go after an American, if you want to look at their information, get a warrant. I yield back.
And I think that's the winning argument. This argument of we're going to need 2,000 judges, I've seen Representative Dan Crenshaw bring that argument up to be able to siphon through all these things. And the question, the response to Dan Crenshaw is, well, what's the problem with that? If we're talking about the rights of American citizens being protected, of what does it matter if it's 2,000 judges or 10,000 judges? His response would probably be, well, then the terrorists are doing what they want while you're, you know, screwing around. And my answer is, of what value is liberty if the citizen has none? We're going to keep you safe, but we're also going to keep an eye on you to keep you safe. Do I think that Dan Crenshaw wants to keep an eye on me? No. Do I think the FBI does, or some government entity, or some part of the DOJ? They've already proven that. Because they've done it to their political enemies. So, let's be clear. There's a real argument here for putting an end to FISA as we know it. Because those who we were supposed to trust are untrustworthy. And we're not going to trust them again. I'm Tony Katz.